Two Marlowe selections. From Tamburlaine, Act One, Scene Two. Disdains Xenocrate to live with me, or you, my lords, to be my followers? Think you I wear this treasure more than you? Not all the gold in India's wealthy arms shall buy the many soldier in my train. Xenocrate, lovelier than the love of Jove, brighter than is the silver Rhodope, fairer than white is snow on Scythian hills, thy parson is more worth to Tamburlaine than the possession of the Parthian crown which gracious stars have promised at my birth. 100 Tartars shall attend on thee, mounted on steeds swifter than Pegasus. Thy garments shall be made of Median silk, enchased with precious jewels of mine own, more rich and valorous than Xenocrates. With milk-white hearts upon an ivory sled thou shalt be drawn amidst the frozen pools, and scale the icy mountains' lofty tops, which with thy beauty will be soon resolved. My martial prizes, with 500 men won on the 50-headed Volga's waves, shall all we offer to Xenocrate, and then myself to fair Xenocrate. From the Jew of Malta, Act One. Give me the merchants of the Indian mines, that trade in metal of the purest mould, the wealthy Moor, that in the eastern rocks without control can pick his riches up, and in his house heap pearl like pebble stones, receive them free, and sell them by the weight, bags of fiery opals, sapphires, amethysts, jacinths, hard topaz, grass-green emeralds, beauteous rubies, sparkling diamonds, and selsine costly stones of so great price as one of them indifferently rated and of a character of this quantity may serve in peril of calamity to ransom great kings from captivity. This is the ware wherein consists my wealth. And thus methinks, should men of judgment frame their means of traffic from the vulgar trade, and as their wealth increaseth, so enclose infinite riches in a little room. But how now stands the wind? Into what corner peers my halcyon's bill? Ah, to the east, yes? See how stands the vanes. East and be south? Why, then I hope my ships I sent for Egypt and the bordering isles are gotten up by Nilo's winding banks, mine argosy from Alexandria, laden with spice and silks, now under sail to Malta through our Mediterranean sea. From Bacon's Essays. What is truth? Said Justin Pilate, and would not stay for an answer. Certainly there be a delight in giddiness, and count it a bondage to fix a belief, affecting free will in thinking as well as in acting. And though the sects of philosophers of that kind be gone, yet there remain certain discoursing wits, which are of the same veins, though there be not so much blood in them as was in those of the ancients. But it is not only the difficulty and labour which men take in finding out of truth, nor again that when it is found it imposes upon men's thoughts that doth bring lies in favour, but a natural though corrupt love of the lie itself. One of the later schools of the Grecians examineth the matter, and is at a stand to think what should be in it that men should love lies, where neither they make for pleasure, as with poets, nor for the advantage, as with the merchant, but for the lies' sake. But I cannot tell. This same truth is a naked and open daylight that doth not show the masks and mummeries and triumphs of the world, half so stately and daintily as candlelights. Truth may perhaps come to the price of a pearl that showeth best bidet, but it will not rise to the price of a diamond or a carbuncle that showeth best in varied lights. The first creator of God in the works of the days was the light of sense. The last was the light of reason, and his Sabbath work ever since is the illumination of his spirit. First he breathed light upon the face of the matter, or chaos. Then he breathed light into the face of man. And still he breatheth and inspireth light into the face of his chosen. Four 17th century lyrics. Drink to me only with thine eyes, and I will pledge with mine, or lave a kiss but in the cup, and I'll not look for wine. The thirst that from the soul doth rise doth ask a drink divine, but might I of Jove's nectar sup, I would not change for thine. I sent thee late a rosy wreath, not so much honouring thee as giving it a hope that there it could not withered be. But thou thereon didst only breathe, and sent'st it back to me, since when it grows and smells, I swear, not of itself, but thee. Go and catch a fallen star, get with child a mandrake root, tell me where all past years are, or who cleft the divil's foot. Teach me to hear mermaids singing, or to keep off envy stinging, and find what wind serves to advance an honest mind. If thou beest born to strange sights, things invisible to see, ride 10,000 days and nights, till age snow white hairs on thee. Thou, when thou returnest, wilt tell me all strange wonders that befell thee, and swear nowhere lives a woman true and fair. If thou findest on, let me know, such a pilgrimage were sweet. Yet do not, I would not go, though at next door we might meet. Though she were true when you met her, and last till you write your letter, yet she will be false ere I come to two or three. When God at first made man, having a glass of blessing standing by, let us, said he, pour on him all we can. Let the world's riches, which disparsed lie, contract into a span. So strength first made a way, then beauty flowed, then wisdom, honor, pleasure. When almost all was out, God made a stay, perceiving that alone of all his treasure rest in the bottom lay. For if I should, said he, bestow this jewel also on my creator, he would adore my gifts instead of me, and rest in nature, not the god of nature. So both should losers be. Yet let him keep the rest, but keep them with repining restlessness. Let him be rich and weary, that at least, if goodness laid him not, yet weariness may toss him to my breast. Here I live, with what my board can with the smallest cost afford. though ne'er so main the viands be, they well content my prue and me. Or pay, or bane, or wort, or beet, whatever comes, content makes sweet. Here we rejoice, because no rent we pay for our poor tenement wherein we rest, and never fare the landlord or the usurer. The quarter day does ne'er affright our peaceful slumbers in the night. We ate our own, and batten more, because we feed on no man's score. But pity those whose flanks grow great, swelled with the lard of others' mate. We bless our fortunes when we see our own beloved privacy, and like our living, where we're known to very few, or else to none. Milton's Invocation to Paradise Lost. Of man's first disobedience, and the fruit of that forbidden tree, whose mortal taste brought death into the world, and all our woe, with loss of Eden, till own greater man restore us, and regain the blissful state. Sing, heavenly muse, that on the secret top of Orb, or of Sinai, didst inspire that shepherd, who first taught the chosen seed in the beginning how the heavens and earth rose out of chaos. Or if Sion Hill delight thee more, and Silo's brook that flowed fast by the oracle of God. I thence invoke thy aid to my adventurous song, that with no middle flight intends to soar above the Aeonian mount, while it pursues things unattempted yet in prose or rhyme. And chiefly thou, O sprite, that dost prefer before our temples, the upright heart and pure instruct me, for thou knowest, thou from the first wast present, and with mighty wings outspread, dove-like sets brooding on the vast abyss and madest it pregnant. What in me is dark, illumine. What is low, raise and support, that to the height of this great argument I may assert eternal providence and justify the ways of God to man. Milton's Sonnet 19. When I consider how my light is spent, ere half my days in this dark world and wide, and that own talent which is death to hide, lodged with me useless, though my soul more bent to serve therewith my Maker, and present my true account, lest he returning chide. Doth God exact day labor, light denied? I fondly ask, but patience to prevent that murmur soon replies. God doth not need either man's work or his own gifts. Who best bear his mild yoke, they serve him best. His state is kingly. Thousands at his bidding speed and post o'er land and ocean without rest. They also serve who only stand and wait. From Lycidas. Weep no more, woeful shepherds, weep no more. For Lycidas, your sorrow is not dead. Sunk though he be beneath the watery floor, so sinks the day star in the ocean bed, and yet anon repairs his drooping head and tricks his beams, and with new spangled oar flames in the forehead of the morning sky. So Lycidas sunk low, but mounted high through the dear might of him that walked the waves were other groves, and other streams along with nectar pure his oozy locks he laves, and hears the unexpressive nuptial song in the blessed kingdoms meek of joy and love. There entertain him all the saints above in solemn troops, and sweet societies that sing, and singing in their glory move, and wipe the tears forever from his eyes. Now, Lycidas, the shepherds weep no more. Henceforth thou art the genius of the shore in thy large recompense, and shalt be good to all that wander in that parlous flood. From Pope's Essay on Criticism. But most by numbers judge a poet's song, and smooth or rough with them is right or wrong. In the bright muse, though thousand charms conspire, her vice is all these tuneful fools admire, who haunt Parnassus but to place their air, not mend their minds, as some to church repair, not for the doctrine, but the music there. These equal syllables alone require, though oft the air the open vowels tire, while expletives their feeble aid do jine, and 10 low words oft creep in one dull line. While they ring round the same unvaried chimes, with sure returns of still expected rhymes. Where'er you find the cooling western breeze, in the next line it whispers through the trees. If crystal streams with pleasing murmurs creep, the reader's threatened, not in vain, with sleep. Then at the last and only couplet fraught with some unmeaning thing they call a thought, a needless Alexandrine ends the song that, like a wounded snake, drags its slow length along. From Pope's The Rape of the Lock. Close by those maids, forever crowned with flowers, where Thames with pride surveys his risen towers, there stands a structure of majestic frame, which from the neighboring Hampton takes its name. Here Britain's statesmen oft the fall for doom of foreign tyrants and of nymphs at whom. Here thou, great Anna, whom three realms obey, dost sometimes counsel take, and sometimes tear. Hither the heroes and the nymphs resort to taste awhile the pleasures of a court. In various talk the instructive hours they passed, who gave the ball or paid the visit last. One speaks the glory of the British queen, and one describes a charming Indian screen. A third interprets motions, looks, and eyes. At every word a reputation dies. Snuff or the fan supply each pause of chat with singing, laughing, ogling, and all that.